Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, hello, and welcome to another Friday night edition of The Bone Collector. Out on location, out in Hamlin, at Odin's Crew Clubhouse, so it's going to sound a little different. I'm using my cell phone tonight, don't have the car, so we're roughing it. But I did want to talk about Lizzie Borden and the murders of her father, Andrew, and her stepmother, Abby, and whether or not she really did it and how she got away with it. That's the big mystery. Right now, though, I like to start off with a little tidbit of information from neat little stories from papers of the 1800s. Now, this one is from the Sunday Truth out of Buckle Lake in Nebraska. And I've been unable to actually find it on a map. So it may have since been renamed, or the story could actually just not be true. However, it says that Skull Lake in Nebraska is so called because a skull was found upon its shore a few years ago. Now, this was from 1887. And the lake is said to be haunted by a single skull, I suppose. And the tradition avers that a bloody massacre of white people took place on the border of the lake. And stories are told of spirits and specters being seen hovering above the surface of the water and balls of fire moving among them. I would definitely love to find out exactly where Skull Lake was, what it's called now, and if any of this activity still happens. So we're going to go right on to Lizzie Borden. And I'm pretty sure that all of you, if you're around my age group, the younger generations probably haven't heard this, but I found this little gem. It's a lot creepier than it was when we were kids, but I think you guys will all recognize this little rhyme. I'm going to play it right now. That was like a jump rope song that we would do as kids. And there was a second verse to that song, and it was, Andrew Borden now is dead. Lizzie hit him on the head. Up in heaven he will sing. On the gallows she will swing. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and that is the whole reason for the show. Plus, I saw, if anybody is unfamiliar with, this is on Discovery Plus. Do believe it might be on the Travel Channel or something like that. It's called Shock Docs. And they talk about everything. They've got an episode on Mothman, the Loch Ness Monster, new evidence revealed for that story. Also, the exorcism of Roland Doe, which, of course, was the influence for the Exorcist movie and the book. There's the Amityville Horror. So there's a whole line of Shock Docs, and they're always putting out new ones. And I just happened to be on Discovery Plus this weekend and found the Lizzie Borden Shock Doc, which they told the history and everything that happened with the murders and the trials and how she got off. But then they have a seance and they do some auto writing and stuff like that. And they find out, ask questions to see if definitively Lizzie Borden did it or didn't do it. That'll ruin it for you. However, you should really check out Shock Docs. It's on Discovery Plus. I'm sure that it's on the Travel Channel, because the very first one that I watched had to do with Ed and Lorraine Warren in the documentary that was done on them. So we're going to get right into Lizzie Borden, innocent or cold-hearted bitch. So I'm voting for cold-hearted bitch, because I 100% believe that Lizzie Borden killed her father and her stepmother in cold blood. And I believe wholeheartedly that there is no dispute, even though she was acquitted. And you'll find out throughout my broadcast tonight that it was really the only reason why she was acquitted is because the police at the time had totally botched the whole situation. Why? That's the question. Why would Lizzie Borden kill father and her stepmother? Well, she wasn't really happy with her stepmother. Wasn't a fan. Her mother, which I had put on by mistake, Sarah. She did not kill Sarah. She killed her stepmother, Abby. Her mother, Sarah Anthony Borden, died in 1863. And her father later married Abby. What was her name? Was Abby. I can't find Abby Durfee Gray. Married Abby. The girls called their stepmother instead of mother, which most stepmothers would prefer. They called her Mrs. Borden. And they really didn't have a whole warm, fuzzy relationship with her. In fact, Lizzie herself believed that Abby married her father just for his money, because he had a lot of money. He was frugal. He didn't spend his money. He lived in a unassuming home and just didn't spend his money at all. Just, we're going to say it that way. He owned several commercial properties. He was the director of some textile mills. He was also the president of a bank and a director of another bank. And at his death, his estate in 1892 times was $300,000. Now, if you take into account for inflation and everything, in 2020, it would be $9 million. So her father was very rich. And Lizzie believed that Abby was there for her father's money. In fact, Lizzie and Emma didn't really eat with the parents. And they took offense to some of the things that he had done months before the murders, where he would gift Abby's family real estate. The sister of their stepmother received a house. And in response to that, Lizzie and Emma demanded that their father give them something too, because he was giving all of his belongings to the stepmother's family. So they gave him a rental property. He gave them rental property. And it was their old home that they lived in with their mother when their mother died. And they bought it from their father for $1. And then a few weeks before the murder, they sold the property back to their father for $5,000. Now that, just their jealousy over their stepmother was not the only reason that Lizzie could have murdered her father and her stepmother. In fact, Lizzie had built a roost for pigeons, and she wanted to take care of them, kind of like homing pigeons type thing. It was a hobby. I mean, she was a rich girl. She didn't have to work. She wasn't married, didn't have any children, so she had no expenses, and she needed something to take her time up aside from teaching Sunday school, that which is she did at their local church. So she had homing pigeons, and about 3 months before the murders, her father killed the pigeons in the barn with a hatchet, believing that the pigeons were there, it would attract local children, and the local children would come on the property and hunt the pigeons. Kind of ludicrous thinking, but this, who knows? He was an eccentric old man who had millions of dollars in our money, and he didn't spend any of it. She resented her father for killing the pigeons, and even though she would say she didn't. That was, at the time, that was something that happened. And she, of course, is not going to admit that there was any reason why she would be mad at her father, because then that would make her a suspect. 1 month before the murder, there was a family argument, and both of the sisters took a long vacation to New Bedford. And even after they returned to Fall River a week before the murders, Lizzie stayed at a rooming house for 4 days before returning to the family residence. So there was huge animosity that really was never taken into account in the murder trial. They also tried to pin it on her mother's brother, their uncle, who had come to the house to discuss business matters with Andrew, and apparently it was speculated that it caused some tense situations there, and that was who murdered them. But I definitely don't agree with that. Lizzie, a few days or even a week before the murders, had purchased prussic acid, which is hydrochloric cyanide. We all know that cyanide is a poison. And oddly enough, for several days before the murders took place, everyone in the household became violently ill. And it was attributed to mutton that had been left on the stove, and it was used over a period of days, and that caused them to become ill. But Abby, the stepmother, thought that perhaps they were being poisoned, because Andrew was not only not popular with his daughters, but he was not popular with the people in the town. This is everything that happened before the murders took place on August 4th, 1892. Her sister isn't even, Emma is not even here at the time of the murders. And Bridget, which is their maid, is doing chores. And Abby's upstairs between 9 and 10:30 making the bed. She was upstairs cleaning and taking care of some things. Even though they have a maid, I find that kind of odd. And Andrew had gone out for a walk. In the time that Andrew was gone, Abby was assailed, even though we all know that it was Lizzie Borden, with an axe on the side of her head. And this knocked her down, face down onto the floor. At that time, her killer hit her 17 more times in the back of the head, killing her instantly. Andrew comes home. He goes to lay down to take a nap. Now, Lizzie says that she saw him when he came in. He wouldn't work. They had to let him in the door. He wanted to take a nap. And Lizzie says that she helped him remove his boots and put his slippers on before he took his nap. Now, big contradiction, because Andrew, when he was found murdered, still had his boots on. So she did not help him take his boots off when he came home. She had the maid didn't feel well, so she went upstairs to her room and took a nap. So we have all, that's what Simone was, and that's how it all laid out. At 11:10, or just before that, Lizzie Borden screams to Maggie to come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him. He slumped into the couch. He had been struck 10, 11 times with such force that one of his eyeballs was completely cut in two. So there was definitely some rage in both killings. Nothing was stolen. There was no assault on Abby. No one in the neighborhood who had been on the street. Now, you've got to remember, this is not in a ritzy neighborhood where people are not normally outside. This is a bustling area that's one block from the business district in Fall River. Nobody heard a thing. There was no screaming. There was no yelling. There was no fight. Nobody was seen going in or out of the house at any time other than the occupants of the house. Now, you got all this. Lizzie, it's obvious her father's dead. His eyeball is hanging out of his head. It's cut in two, yet she sends Maggie across the street to fetch the doctor, just apparently to see if anything can be done to her, with her father. When the doctor comes and he says, he's dead, there isn't a damn thing I can do about it, the police are called because now it's a murder. And at that point, they only know that Andrew is dead. They don't know that Abby is upstairs in the bedroom laying in a pool of blood. They don't find that out until the neighbors come and slowly walk up the stairs and see when they're halfway up and they look into that room that Abby's laying their face down in a puddle of blood. The police are called. They do not do a proper investigation, and during the trial, they completely admit that they botched it up. They did search Lizzie's room, but they didn't search it as a crime scene. It was just a looking to see if, you know, there was anybody in there, looking to see if, you know, somebody was hiding, somebody had entered or exited there. But they weren't looking for evidence because at that point, they did not suspect Lizzie at all. Lizzie was a woman. Women don't normally, at that time, crimes like this. So much anger was put into these murders. Now, the police are sticking around the house that night of the murder, and everybody's allowed to stay in there, which I found was very strange. The uncle is staying there. A friend of Lizzie is also staying there with her, Alice Russell. Police are just hanging around, just checking to see, I guess, to see if the murderer would come back, because still in their mind, Lizzie could not have committed this crime. During the night, the police officer says that he sees Alice Russell and Lizzie go into the cellar with a kerosene lamp and a pail. He said then, and a little while later, Lizzie went back in the cellar, but alone. He couldn't see what she was doing, but he said it appeared that she was bending over a sink. doing something, what would you bend over a sink for but to clean something? On August 5th, hundreds of people were at the house. On August 5th, they don't do a thorough investigation, a search of the home. They don't do it until 2 days after the murder on August 6th, do they search the home. They found a broken-handled hatchet head, two hatchets. None of them have blood on them, but they believe that the broken handle on the one hatchet is a fresh break, and that the other four are covered with dirt and dust and stuff, but the dirt and the dust that are on the broken-handled one seems to be staged. Then they find, or Russell, her friend, testifies to this, that she walked into the kitchen and found Lizzie tearing up a dress. And she tells her friend that she plans on putting the dress into the fire because she brushed up some paint and brushed against some paint somewhere and got paint on it, and it needed to be thrown away. Burned right that day. I'm calling bullshit on the paint, that blood, that dress had to have been covered in blood. And it was never determined, because she burned the dress, whether she had worn it on the day of the murder, because that evidence was. Now, she went to trial on the 11th of August. She was arrested for the murder of Andrew and Abby, and she stayed in prison for 9 months while the trial took place. There was great outrage because she was a woman and she was being stuck in a prison, and women's rights groups were telling that she could not have done it, that there was no way she would get a fair trial because she could not have a trial of her peers because women could not vote and therefore they could not serve on a jury. The prosecution failed to bring up the prussic acid that she bought and how the family was ill, especially Andrew and Abby had become more ill than the rest of the family, because, of course, if you're going to commit a murder, the smart thing to do is you take a little bit of this poison, not enough to kill you, but enough to get you sick, so it takes away that suspicion on you, because you were sick too. So you just didn't, maybe you didn't eat as much of the mutton as Abby and Andrew did, but you did eat some of it, so you couldn't possibly have poisoned them because you were sick as well. She wasn't a dumb woman, not in the least, but she left a lot of questions. And reading articles about how she got away with it, the main thing is that she was a woman, and also community, her class. Her father was wealthy. Wealthy women didn't commit axe murders. Women who taught Sunday school it was called her wealthy Central Congregational Church, they didn't commit axe murders. So the only thing that got her off, even though there was so much mounting evidence that she killed her father and stepmother, was the fact that she was a woman of wealth and status, and she was a Christian. Now, in this day and age, those things would definitely not exclude you from being a murderer and being convicted. In fact, there are well-known cases of very religious women who kill. that's a whole nother night. Now, one of the big things, now when you watch the Shock Docs, I'm not going to tell you what Lizzie Borden said when they contacted her, but they bring up an interesting little theory that the Borden family has a curse. Now, I'm not quite sure how theory holds up. I don't agree with it. Next, the house that's next to the house that Andrew Borden and Lizzie and all of them lived in, and the house that the murders took place, right next to that house was a house that was owned by another branch of the Borden family. And the second wife of that Borden, Eliza Darling Borden, apparently she suffered severe postpartum depression. She had 3 children in rapid succession, and she couldn't handle it anymore. So what she did was, now some of the reports say that she drowned all 3 of her children in the cistern in the cellar. Some say that she just drowned 2 of her children in the cistern in the cellar. Regardless of how many, she murdered her children, and then she went upstairs in their house and slit her throat with a straight razor. I don't know how that is a curse. That was definitely postpartum depression. I don't find that as calling for a curse, but that neither here nor there, because Lizzie Borden, still in my eyes, no matter what the circumstances, was responsible for the death of her father and stepmother. Interesting fact, the house in which the murders took place is now Bed and Breakfast in Fall River, and you can are rented by the night, just like in a hotel, and you can actually stay in the room where Abby Borden was murdered. You can all, everything they've kind of put back to the house the way it was at the time of the murder, you know, same style, couch, color, everything, not the actual couch, because that was completely covered in blood, but the same idea. So, Lizzie Borden, I am 100% certain, was the murderer. In fact, there were no other suspects. She was the only one. There was nothing else no one else that could have done it. Lizzie had to have done it. So next week, I'm going to talk about the dark origins of some of the very popular nursery rhymes from when we were growing up. The show is going to be on location because next Friday night is a special event, seance event, and I'm going to be doing the show 6:15 instead of at 7, but it will also be on demand. So remember 10 disturbing origins of some of our favorite nursery rhymes as children. And catch me on Sunday at the Rochester Public Market for Artist Row. And you guys have a great night, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. Goodbye.